Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the IMT Des Moines Marathon, October 19th and 20th, with 6 race events including the full and half marathons, marathon relay, 5K, and more. Register at DesMoinesMarathon.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Together, Sarah Voss and Dan Wolf are the Dead Horses, a roots and Americana band based out of Milwaukee, Wisconsin. They're traveling to Des Moines to perform at Vaudeville Muse on June 5th, a concert presented by Iowa Public Radio. They'll also be doing a free lunch and listen that day from noon to 1 at West End Architectural Salvage in Des Moines, also sponsored by Iowa Public Radio. And here's a little taste. This is Turntable from their recent album, My Mother the Moon.
In the arms of a lover, in the arms of your son, you lay your breath heavy, you're not anyone. Won't you stay for a while, won't you rest yourself? You know it ain't such a shame to have lost yourself. You know it ain't such a shame to have lost yourself.
Again, that's a little bit of Turntable from the recent album My Mother the Moon from the Dead Horses. And the Dead Horses, Sarah Voss and Dan Wolf, are here with me now. Thank you both so much for being here today.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
Now, Sarah, you are the front woman and the songwriter, the voice of the Dead Horses. Dan, you, of course,
I'm the back alley guy.
The back alley guy. That wasn't what I was going to say, but okay. If that's your preferred title, we can stick with that.
Some people might agree.
When did the two of you first start making music together?
So Sarah and I met in 2010 in Oshkosh, Wisconsin. We met through some mutual friends that we were playing music with, and we've been playing together ever since.
And Sarah, this was at a pretty difficult point in your life. You had gone away to go to school in Milwaukee. Things had not gone as well as you'd hoped, and you moved back to Oshkosh. Tell me about encountering Dan and what starting to make music with him did for you.
Man, it did a lot, and you're right. When I first moved to Milwaukee, it was kind of a safe haven for me, you know, to get away from the town I grew up in and all the difficult things that kind of happened throughout my adolescence. But a couple years into college, I think things hit me in a way that that they hadn't before. And I was also very much confronting feelings about my sexual orientation, and that kind of pushed me off the ledge a little bit. I had kind of a breakdown and ended up moving back to Oshkosh. I was in a really vulnerable place, and it's strange to think about now because it seems like, you know, I was a different person, but I recall things like trying to go to the library, and that seemed like a huge feat for me. But I did go to this old open mic that I had frequented when I was in high school, and that's where I ran into some friends who were playing with Dan, and they asked me if I wanted to come join. And to me, that was something that was an easy yes. I really wanted to play music, so we set up a time to hang out. And as it turned out, I actually showed up first to Dan's house, so I was there just meeting this strange kid that I had never met before. And I remember, you know, first meeting and thinking he's just a really kind person. And those first days playing in the band really, really revived me from the slump I was in. And it took a while. It took, you know, a year or so, I think, before I felt kind of like normal and strong again. But I'm so thankful that it happened that way, you know.
And Dan, tell me this from your perspective. You encountered Sarah again at this really low moment in her life, but what did you see in her as a musician that really excited you?
As a musician, well, first and foremost, just her natural ability of singing and bringing songs to the table was very intriguing, and it was a little bit of a different swing because I've been playing with these two other guys that Sarah had mentioned that she had known from earlier, and it's interesting to think about. I guess I could relate in a way because I had recently just dropped out of school myself. I don't know if I would say I had a breakdown, but I was very, very kind of lost in what I wanted to do. Like, I did not know the path I wanted to take. I grew up thinking or being taught that, you know, you should go to college, you should get a degree, but all I wanted to do was play music. And I continued to do that. And then once the bandmates introduced Sarah, it just kind of seemed like things were falling into place and we had a really cool thing going, and it just seemed natural from the beginning, and it seemed productive, and it seemed really worthy of the time we were putting into it. So it just felt like a positive thing we were doing.
That's the origin of your musical partnership. Was that also, Dan, was that also the origin of Dead Horses? The name, the Dead Horses, the concept for the band?
Yeah, I think the name probably came just shortly after that. Right, Tara?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I think we'd gotten together and started playing, just rehearsing, and we had lined up a weekly gig in Oshkosh, and which, of course, we took because we were being, you know, compensated with dinner and a couple drinks, and we were very happy to take that opportunity. And I think that's when the name came about, and we needed a name to call ourselves for this gig, so that's how it came up.
What did it mean at the beginning, Sarah?
So when the name was originally brought up to me, I actually was pretty naive about it. I didn't really understand fully what it meant. And I don't remember exactly when I became aware of that, but I was aware that a friend of ours and a friend of the players that we were playing with at the time had passed away of a heroin overdose. And he was someone that I knew not super well, but he passed away of an overdose, and the name Dead Horses was kind of in memory to him. And as time progressed, becoming aware of that, you know, it was really uneasy for Dan and me. I think we would both agree there were many times where we considered changing it. It kind of seemed like a dark name, but, you know, growing a little bit more mature and realizing how that does, it is kind of reflective of even our own personal scenarios entering into this project, and certainly seeing it become more and more prevalent to everybody. And this kind of opioid epidemic that we're facing as a country, you know, and as a people, we found it relevant to keep the name, and in fact, even try to start talking about it.
What does it mean in that context?
Well, so horse is slang for heroin. So dead horses was just a direct reference to heroin. Was that what you were asking? Mm-hmm. Or?
You also lost another bandmate. He didn't lose his life to heroin, but had to leave the band because of addiction.
Yeah, we've struggled with that with several members, and it's an interesting kind of prominent thing within the music industry. A lot of people using substances either to, you know, self-medicate with the issues that they're dealing with in their personal lives, or sometimes even just to be able to live the kind of lifestyle that's often expected of musicians. And I think facing that at such an early point in, you know, my own career really helped me, you know, has set me on a path towards being careful about that sort of thing. And, you know, and as a band, I find that we're looking for ways to make our lifestyle more sustainable, so that we're less likely to falter to something like, you know, substance abuse, to keep our batteries charged.
Given all of those difficult things that both of you were going through with bandmates and that changing environment, Dan, what do you think it was about you and Sarah that made this partnership something that could endure?
I would say that right off the bat, the time we spent together working on our craft as musicians and putting in the time performing gigs, and in some of the scenarios that we did perform gigs where, you know, we were doing lots of heavy lifting, lots of work, lots of running around. I think there was just a general similarity between us that we both really wanted this. I would not have guessed that meeting Sarah that first day when we had that rehearsal that we would be the two people still playing together. And I'm so very happy that we are. And I feel really fortunate to be working on a project like this with Sarah to this day.
We are going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm talking to Dan Wolf and Sarah Voss together. They are the Dead Horses, a Milwaukee, Wisconsin-based band. They're traveling to Des Moines to perform at Vaudeville Muse on June 5th. It's a concert presented by Iowa Public Radio. They'll also be doing a free lunch and listen that day from noon to 1 at West End Architectural Salvage in Des Moines. That's also sponsored by Iowa Public Radio. And we will continue our conversation in a moment. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
Oh, sacred fancy, what have you done to me? My hands aren't clean, my hands aren't clean. The mother, the moon, my stable stool.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the IMT Des Moines Marathon, October 19th and 20th, with 6 race events including the full and half marathons, marathon relay, 5K, and more. Register at DesMoinesMarathon.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. With me right now are the Dead Horses, a roots and Americana band based out of Milwaukee, Wisconsin. They're traveling to Des Moines to perform on June 5th. There's a lunch and listen that day presented by Iowa Public Radio. It's from noon to 1 at West End Architectural Salvage in Des Moines, a free opportunity. And also there's a concert that night, June 5th at Vaudeville Muse, presented by Iowa Public Radio. And before the break, we were talking about how the two of you really got together and started performing music together. I want to dig into the songwriting, the music that you perform together. And Sarah, I know that as the songwriter of the group, you have dug deeply into your personal past. But I also read that when the two of you first got together, you were digging into your musical past, digging into high school notebooks and things that you had written as a teenager.
Totally, yeah. That's actually one of my favorite things to do. I think it's kind of why I've never stopped, you know, journaling or just kind of free writing, is because, I don't know, it's almost like this obsession with wanting to keep something like untrue and unfaltered, and it's on paper, like almost like, you know, you can't really trust your memory or you don't remember a lot of things, but having these writings from the past are just this true glimpse into, you know, what you were experiencing at a different point in your life. And I really feel that we are different people, you know, with every day that passes, we experience different things and we change. And it's just so fascinating to me to be able to, dig back into the past. And I still do that now. I have a box of journals and stuff that if I ever die, I hope someone, you know, burns right away.
Well, I was just going to say, and maybe this is more reflective of me than it is of you, but digging into your teenage past, that sounds painful, maybe embarrassing. What is it about that really sparks your creativity?
Well, I think a lot of it was, you know, obviously just this pain that I had gone through, and it was so much at one time. And I've seen this happen with a lot of families. I feel like my childhood was very secure, and you know, nothing too bad ever really happened. And then it was like one day, one year, everything changed, and then it was just kind of this mighty storm of things.
Let's talk a little bit about what did happen in your family. You've shared this story many times, but for people who aren't familiar, you grew up in an evangelical household, and your dad was a minister?
That's correct. Yep.
Okay, so, and you were actually living in the church parish and had really a kind of a sheltered childhood from that perspective, right?
Definitely very sheltered and kind of this carefully constructed reality. And I definitely had this belief that, as many children do, that bad things don't happen to good people, and that, you know, that God created things a certain way. But I always had these, you know, even just theologically speaking, these doubts, these things that I, even as a kid, that I was thinking about, like, that doesn't sit right with me. And I would struggle with that because I felt guilty for basically just for having, you know, intellectual thoughts about it, because there wasn't room for movement. There were certain things that, you know, you couldn't not believe without being, you know, condemned to hell more or less. And that was really hard on me. I feel like I'm still working through some of that. But yeah, when I was in high school, my brother started kind of really facing some pretty serious mental illness, which I think the church had a hard time dealing with, largely because a lot of times mental illness, especially in young people, rears its head in ways that are just confusing, and you don't know what it is right away. I remember there were times that police were called to my house, you know, and the church didn't like that. That looked bad. And, you know, my parents had some financial issues and had to declare bankruptcy. And, you know, that was unacceptable to the church as well. And they were suffering with, you know, numbers in the church, which is across the board for a lot of churches like that in our country. And, you know, and I think that they needed somebody to blame that on. So kind of in the midst of all this family chaos, the church said, you need to leave. And so when I was, that happened when I was turning 16, so we had 3 months to leave, you know, the house that we grew up in and find a new place to live. And, you know, my dad had been a pastor for over 20 years, and he's overqualified to do a lot of things and underqualified to do other things, and, you know, in his 50s. And it definitely kind of felt like they turned their backs on us. And that was hard because that was my reality growing up until that point. And
so you're dealing with your brother's mental illness, which obviously has shaken your family to the core, your parents' mm-hmm. financial problems, and then the church excommunicates your family.
Yes, essentially. They said, you have to leave. Another part of the story that is interesting is it was actually another church that called us and said, hey, we have a parish that's not being used by our pastor, and you can live here for really an inexpensive amount. So that's kind of an interesting twist in the story. That's very real life, because that's how life works, right? Like, it's not as simple as the church is bad or the church is good. Because, you know, one church turned their backs on us and another said, hey, like, we'd love to help you out. And I think that's an important part of the story.
For sure. So you lose your home, and even though you go to another home, I mean, I can imagine that your family was just in a lot of pain and confusion. There was a lot of uncertainty for a long time, right?
Yeah, it took a long time to kind of readjust to that. And I would say, you know, my family was still really struggling. And by the time I left for college, and when I left for college, it was, again, just this great thing for me. And I felt so much better just being kind of away from it, but still close to my family. My mom used to email me like every day my freshman year of college, which when I think back on that now, I think that's just like the sweetest thing on her end. And I'm still close with them now. But we all needed to find, I think, our space in our own ways from everything that happened. But it has been relatively peaceful the last few years for us, nothing super insane happening, and just finding ways to cope with, my older brother who has schizophrenia, finding ways to work with that and help, you know, improve his quality of life and keep doing what we're doing.
When you started writing songs inspired by what your family had gone through, which so much of My Mother, the Moon reflects that, and sharing your story in interviews, how did your family react to that?
That's been a really, really hard part of it. And now that it has been about a year since we put out the record, it's interesting because now people are starting to ask that question, like, how has this worked with your family? It led to a lot of uncomfortable conversations between us where, you know, I've reassured my mom, like, no, I don't, you know, I don't think that I had an awful upbringing, but it was hard for me. And a lot of people have difficult adolescence or childhoods. And it's been really neat to have people come up at shows, you know, all around the country and say, like, man, I really relate to your story. And it means a lot to know that someone else feels the way that I do. And that's kind of this whole thing about art, and especially what I feel like we do as a band, is creating this space where, you know, you can feel okay to feel something, whether that's sadness or even anger or whatever, joy, that it's okay to feel it, and that we can even, you know, feel it together and feel less alone for that.
Let's listen to a little bit of one of your recent singles. This is called Family Tapes and was just released a couple months ago.
You roll your pretty eyes at me. I know you see things that I don't see. I'd like to wrap myself around you for a while. Shoes and roll your pants. Yeah, I've always thought that I just can't. Sometimes I feel trapped in my head in a world of gray.
Just a little bit of Family Tapes from The Dead Horses. And Sarah, given that you had written so much inspired by your family's experiences, when I listened to this song, I assumed that it was about your family memories, but that wasn't the inspiration for it. Tell me about the inspiration.
No, I must just have an obsession with just family dynamics or something. But no, the song is not like a literal interpretation of this, but kind of a lot of different things, but spawned by my girlfriend who a year or two ago, she took all of her family VHS tapes from being a kid and digitalized them. And it was interesting watching her go through this process, which was kind of emotional for her. And how much it meant to her to be able to do that, and how much it meant to her family. And it was fascinating for me to watch. And I also thought, just kind of interesting comparing it to the way that we now record things through social media, how there's this, you know, this filter on everything. You can post only what you want to post. The picture doesn't turn out, you can delete it. Whereas, you know, when I was growing up, and a lot of us are growing up, these family tapes, it's like, you know, your dad would just set up the camera and leave it in the corner of the room, and it would record a lot. And I found it pretty fun to watch hers, and it made me look at mine too.
As you dig into your personal experiences and share them musically, that's a really vulnerable thing to do. Why do you feel like it's worth taking that leap for you, Sarah?
It's interesting. Sometimes I don't feel that it is. To be honest, there's days where it's like, you know, I don't know that I feel like being really vulnerable today. And it's something that I'm kind of dealing with it as it comes. You know, writing the songs, I don't ever second guess that. That just feels right. And that feels like just like a natural thing to put out and do and let people take it as they may. But all the other stuff around it is something I consider. But I would say, again, kind of having people come up at shows and say how it touched them and how they could relate to it, that makes me feel really good about it. And also just, you know, trying to feel like it's okay to be open and honest and thinking that that's just, you know, what's it going to help if I keep it private and to myself, you know? Is that going to help?
You guys have just released a couple of new singles. Dan, what's on the horizon for you?
Well, we are, two singles out so far. We have three recorded so far. We'll be putting out another one in about a month. We don't have a specific date, but we're going to keep recording. We kind of wanted to compile the songs that we're recording as we're going along as an EP. So we're talking about trying to release that at the end of the year as an EP, but also using the later part of this summer and into fall to start really kind of brainstorming and writing and constructing a lot of new ideas for a new album. I think we've really enjoyed and grown a lot as through the past couple records that we have put out. I think we found ourselves in a point where we were only a year past the release of our most recent record, My Mother the Moon, and we were itching to play new material and still keep putting out new material. So that's kind of where the singles idea came. But the horizon is looking to involve a lot of recording.
So, and also touring this summer. I mean, you're heading to Iowa the beginning of June. Is that kicking off a summer of touring for you?
Yeah, that's going to be right at the head of our June tour. We just finished up a May tour that was about 3 weeks down in the South, and we went to a lot of new spots that we hadn't played and had some amazing turnouts and some really just kind of unforgettable audiences that I don't know if Sarah or I was really expecting. So we had the chance to do that tour down in that area. But yeah, June will take us out west, starting in Des Moines, and then take us to Colorado and areas of Montana, and we'll be swinging back. But yeah, a lot of touring, always a lot of touring. I think that's something that, Sarah and I have been doing that relentlessly since 2010. The first few years, obviously, more in the Midwest and around Wisconsin, but the past several years now, like, it seems like we've been bouncing coast to coast quite a bit.
Dan Wolf and Sarah Voss, thank you both so much for talking with me today.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you so much.
I've been talking with Sarah Voss and Dan Wolf. Together, they are the band Dead Horses, a roots and Americana band based out of Milwaukee, Wisconsin. They're traveling to Des Moines to perform at Vaudeville Muse on June 5th, a concert presented by Iowa Public Radio. They'll also be doing a free lunch and listen that day from noon to 1 at West End Architectural Salvage. That's also sponsored by Iowa Public Radio. And we're going to go out today with On and On from their recent album, My Mother, the Moon.
Desolate ain't done no wrong, so I ride along and I write a song. Going on for way too long, and on and on and on and on.
This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
Lights just seem to be so bright.